I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. When the Pennsylvania legislature approved Philadelphia's cigarette tax to help the city schools last year, lawmakers required the School Reform Commission to open the application process for more charter schools in the city. The SRC is now considering 40 proposals after 7 years of pent-up demand, with thousands of students interested in attending a charter. There has been a contentious debate in Philadelphia over the expansion of charters ever since the state takeover more than a decade ago. About a third of city students attend a charter school. And added to the problem are the financial crises the school district has faced in recent years. It still has a multi-million dollar shortfall, even after layoffs and school closures and belt tightening. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio to talk about charters and district schools. Mark Leeson is executive director of the Philadelphia School Partnership. Mark, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. And also with us is Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. Donna, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to see you.
Let me begin with you, Mark. And you have offered a gift, I'm using quotation marks here, of $25 million to the district to, help defray some of the costs of expanding charters?
That's right. Of the 39 charter applications that are pending, somewhere between 12 and 16 of the applications are from operators who already run some of the highest performing schools in the city of Philadelphia. Using that number, we estimated that $25 million would help to defray the stranded cost to the school district when a student moves from a district school to a charter school.
It would help some of it. It's about $2,000 per student, as I understand it.
That's right.
And yet the cost of sending a student, or I guess these stranded costs for students in Philadelphia, is closer to $7,000.
We don't agree with that figure. The school district has used that figure but has not put out a backup to sort of support the figure. The figure comes from a consulting report 2 years ago that was based on a hypothetical example. It does not align to an analysis of the school district's audited financials. But what we don't want to do is get hung up here in a debate about the number. You know, the partnership was formed 4 years ago. Our mission is to expand great schools of all types. We're not about charters per se. We're about expanding great schools. These charter applications, some of them, represent an opportunity to do exactly that. And it's a stated goal of Superintendent Height and the School Reform Commission to expand quality charters. It's part of their Action Plan 2.0. But what we've heard from those leaders is cost inhibitors are potentially holding us back. And so this is an effort on our part to bring some philanthropic support to the table in the near term over 3 years to help defray that.
How do you see this gift, Donna?
Well, first of all, I think it's extraordinarily generous of anybody to step forward and offer the school district $25 or $35 million. So I think that there's a real commitment on the part of PSP to really help think through solutions. I guess I find it, you know, I'm an accountant by trade, even though I've been an organizer forever. And so numbers matter. And, you know, Boston Consulting Group's a pretty sophisticated firm. And Tom Knutson, who ran the school district, commissioned that report. And the school district's financial office has looked at this issue of the cost of expanding charter enrollment on numerous occasions, two occasions, and confirm the figure of about 7,000. I mean, it makes sense if you have to pay a charter 10, 12,000. You save some money because the kid's not in the classroom, but you still have to pay the teacher, the hot, the light, the lights, the plumbing, etc. There's still a cost that has to be divided across a smaller pool of resources, and it would have to be more than 2,000. So it worries me because I feel like there's this extraordinary excitement by $25 million and the potential, as it's described, of defraying 3 years of costs. And I just sort of, you know, wish that we were a little bit clearer that it doesn't cover those costs. And, you know, if, for instance, the $25 million were supporting a smaller pool of students, you guys, the Philadelphia School Partnership has said, oh, this might support 11,000 students going to charters. Well, it might support about 1,500 kids for 3 years, and that's nothing to sneeze at. So maybe if we were having that conversation, it would be easier. But I think there's frustration because the numbers don't add up.
Going back to Mark, who's behind the money? I mean, this is a sizable amount of money, obviously a very generous gift. Who's ponying up for this?
Well, PSP has about 60 different donors at this point. They are foundations, individual donors, corporations, local, regional, national. we've raised about $75 million prior to this point. This gift is from a subset of those donors pledging new money. Because this is still very much in flux, those donors aren't prepared to get their names into the mix here. But if this ever does become an actual grant, then there'll be an opportunity for that at that point. I'd like to go back to this point about the $7,000, though, and point out that under Governor Rendell, where Donna worked in the administration, there was a charter reimbursement line at the state level that reimbursed about $2,000 to $3,000 per pupil. So there is a basis for a number in that range coming from previous state policy. Also, I would point out that to believe the $7,000 number, to which the district computed as a $500 million cost in this morning's paper.
I saw that.
You would have to believe that the district could take every student in charters, that's 70,000 students, back into the district and educate them for only $4,000 per pupil, which is on par with what Catholic schools spend, but well below what the district spends. So that just doesn't feel like a realistic assessment of the situation.
Well, I mean, Don, is this just a fight about money, or is there something else?
No, let me just say, the charter reimbursement at the state level was not calculated on a stranded cost analysis. It was really a way to get extra money to Chester Upland, Philadelphia, and a few other school districts that were highly enrolled in charters. So using that as an analysis would sort of be mixing apples and oranges. But I think we need to avoid having a conversation about the numbers on this. I do not believe we are at a pro-charter or an anti-charter moment at the School Reform Commission. We are at a school funding crisis moment. And were the School Reform Commission interested in permitting those charters who have demonstrated capacity to teach poor children to expand, if they wanted to do that, they wouldn't have the money to do that even with the PSP dollars. And I'd rather we were having a conversation about how to solve that problem.
That's a problem, what, that goes to Harrisburg?
Yes.
Is that where that problem lies? And
Absolutely.
Do you agree with that, Mark?
Absolutely. Donna and I both are members of the Campaign for Fair Education Funding. We've deployed a significant amount of time and energy in the last year and a half to advocating for a weighted student funding formula and for the restoration of charter reimbursement at the state level. Both are necessary in our view.
But at the same, I mean, yes, there's a new governor who seems to be more interested in trying to help the Philadelphia schools, I think, no matter whether they're charter or district schools. But nonetheless, you've got a Republican legislature that doesn't seem particularly interested, although Terzai was in the city looking around. But is there really an appetite? You know Harrisburg, Don. Is there appetite to increase money for Philadelphia?
Well, what was most astonishing about Representative Terzai's visit was his demand to spend. No matter what, the charter should be expanded regardless of the impact on the school district's budget. And I'm sure he is quite happy with the PSP offer, which, you know, really doesn't get to cover the costs. So the irony is that we have Republicans saying spend, but not willing to put up the resources behind that. And that's very troubling and irresponsible in my estimation. I think there are a set of school districts across this state who are hurting, and they're hurting both because they have to meet charter expansion costs and their basic ed costs. So there is Tom Corbett effectively created a relatively unified coalition for school funding, more so than Ed Rendell or Tom Ridge was ever able to build by doing the $1 billion a cut. So there's a ripeness up there. Now, the question is, what's going to happen on the revenue side of the budget, right? And are people willing to say, we got to invest in education for the future of the state and do what it takes to do that?
To you, Mark, let me just ask you, only because I've seen a number of descriptions of your organization, Philadelphia School Partnership, that it's a pro-charter organization. Is that true?
No, we are a pro-great schools organization. Our mission is to expand the number of great schools in the city of Philadelphia of all types. It includes traditional district schools, district magnet schools, public charter schools, private and Catholic schools, with an emphasis on schools that serve low-income children. There are great district schools. There are great charter schools. We want to expand both of them, and we've granted about $12 million to the school district over the last 3 years to increase the number of seats in quality schools in the district. We've also granted about $20 million to charters for the same purpose.
Looking at these charters that want to open in Philadelphia, are they all worthy? Do they all pass your test, Mark?
No. Of the 40 applications were submitted, one of which has since been withdrawn, many of them are from new operators that we have no experience with and we've not done any significant due diligence on. Of the ones who have existing schools, in our estimation, there are a number of very high-quality providers there. There are about 15 schools that score 70 or higher on the state school performance profile, which is significantly above the district average of 56. Many of these schools have long waiting lists with many low-income families on those waiting lists. Families want to get into these schools. These schools are doing a good job now. They're doing it efficiently on a taxpayer dollar. And while we absolutely agree that we have a structural funding problem in Pennsylvania and in particular in Philadelphia, we also have to remember that the mission of public education is to educate kids. And if we have schools that are ready, willing, and able to do that today, we need to put some resources into doing that.
Donna, how do you see this list? It was 40, now 39. These are charters that want to open or expand in Philadelphia.
Right. Most of them are Philly operators. So two-thirds of the applicants are from Philly operators. And when you look at the Philly operators, most of the Philly operators do not currently educate strong majorities of poor kids, English language learner kids, or special ed kids. But some of them do. There is, based on our analysis, maybe 9 charters who are in the mix who have a track record and capacity to educate lower-income children at a relatively strong level. However, there's a lot of still unknowns. So, for instance, some of the charters who are really strong are 9th to 12th grade, and their process is they don't replace kids who drop out. So that automatically kind of inflates their success rate, and that's fine.
Because the kids that drop out obviously can't do the
work. Right,
they
may not have been able to do the work, and it's okay. I mean, I don't actually have a problem if a charter has that as its theory. They're a going concern. They don't readmit for an empty seat. But that's not a methodology that can work for a school district at large, because then we would have nowhere for everybody to go. So I think we need a little bit more information, and they certainly don't represent 11,000 seats. But I think there's two other issues in this, Marty, which is we have a school reform commission that is already charged with overseeing 86 charters. And most of those charters are doing very poorly, even based on PSP's analysis. Most of the public schools are doing poorly, too.
Well, I was just going to ask
you. Yes, but we have an office of 3 or 4 people that's overseeing 86 charters, and it doesn't seem rational to me to expand their authority at this point without resources. And we don't have the resources either to pay for the charters or this office to make sure we're doing things well. And I will say we could solve this numbers problem. The School Reform Commission requires of itself to do a fiscal analysis of charter expansion to determine the actual cost of a charter's expansion and whether there are alternative ways to approach that would drive down costs. And they have not adhered to their own policy. And so they're having a hearing next week, and they haven't done the fiscal analysis that they said that they would require themselves to do.
We have to take a very short break. And I do want to talk about the fact that there seems to be demand in this city from parents and also from children for more charter schools. Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. Mark Leeson is Executive Director of the Philadelphia School Partnership. We take a very short break already. Lots of phone calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. I see a Facebook comment, a tweet, and an email. You can find us on social media, Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Talking about district schools and charter schools here in Philadelphia. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The School Reform Commission in Philadelphia is considering 39 proposals from charter schools looking to open or expand in the city. Currently, about a third of the city's overall student population attending one of the 84 charters in the city. And there's a long waiting list for students that want to get into charters. It's been about 7 years since the last expansion, and we're looking at the many sides of this complex and controversial issue. Again, with our guest, Mark Leeson, head of the Philadelphia School Partnership, and Donna Cooper, head of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. Mark, I do want to go back to you, and we have a lot of people that want to join our conversation. There was a recent Newsworks article looking at some of these schools that want to either expand or open in Philadelphia. These would be charters. Number of them, many of them looking to open in zip codes where you've got more gentrified areas of the city, where you've already got pretty good public schools that are doing a pretty good job as well. And the idea that some of these zip codes where there really is a need for perhaps a good charter school, you don't see the same kind of interest. Can you respond to that?
Well, I don't think there's any question that we need to address the educational needs of families that have moved into and around the Center City area. These are prospective taxpayers with good incomes who could be very important to the city's economic future. And many of these families, as we know, are leaving the city when their kids get to be school age. I think that's a real problem. In the last decade, Philadelphia's population 18 to 34 grew dramatically, and its population of 35 to 49 shrunk almost by the same percentage. So that's real. However, PSP's focus is on low-income children. Right. So as we look at this, we're more looking at the opportunity to serve children in those neighborhoods outside of Center City and the surrounding region.
But can you say, Donna, and you talk about data, but can you say, can you compare, is it apples and oranges? Is it apples and apples when you compare charter schools and how the children are doing versus district schools? Can you just line them up, look at scores, and say this one is doing better than another one?
Well, actually, no. I mean, obviously, you have to look at the nature of the student population, which is why when we released our report on the legal, fiscal, and oversight challenges of the charter expansion, we identified the schools that have high concentrations of low-income students and how are they doing to educate children. So of the 29 local operators, 9 seem to be doing a relatively strong job, actually a very strong job. Mm-hmm. And it does raise a question for me about how do we as a district really sit down with those charter operators and replicate those districts and maybe think about the degree to which they can offer real opportunities for the public schools in our lowest income neighborhoods. But to your point, Marty, Chester Arthur is a neighborhood elementary with a very active parent group, and the charter applications in that community will wipe out the enrollment in that community. It's not a high population area, so it isn't, you know, Center City. It's just below Center City, south of it. And, you know, the expansion proposed for that community is 3 times the size of the neighborhood elementary school. And you see that
as poaching?
Well, I see it as presenting a problem because I think we, as the school district recently put a school redesign grant in Chester Arthur. There's a very active group of parents. And then all of a sudden, there's going to be a charter operator. So the market has completely changed. And it will undermine the progress at Chester Arthur. And I'm not sure that whatever charter is going to open in that community will end up taking all of those children. And we see that in Powell in West Philly. And we see that at Tilden, which is a new middle, you know, new principal, new investment, and the charter operators in that community will be doing 9 times the size of the middle school that's currently there, and it's not a population growth area. This isn't all because the charter operators are poaching. The school district actually, in its RFP for the new charters, recommended that people apply in these zip codes. And so it does raise a question about does the right hand know what the left hand's doing?
Oh, interesting.
Because the school district is investing in these buildings, and then it's asking for more charter operators in the same community.
Go ahead, Mark.
I just would like to encourage all of us to get beyond this district versus charter concept, this idea that charters are somehow undermining the district. If you step back and look big picture from the late 1990s when the first charter school opened to today, there are some incontrovertible facts. The graduation rate across the entire city has grown from the mid-40s up into the high 60s. Charter schools have had a definite impact on that. But even as they have, the district graduation rate has risen also. So while it may be true in specific cases that the growth of one charter school has a negative impact on a neighborhood school nearby, when we look at the big picture, what we've seen over the last 15 years is a gradually improving graduation rate citywide, a gradually improving graduation rate for low-income and minority students. We have a long way to go. We're not sending enough kids to college. We're not preparing enough kids for the work world. But we are in a better place today than we were 15 or 20 years ago.
Mark.
And the charter schools have been a big contributor to that. And we need to be, Donna just said, 9 of the 29, by their estimation, are doing a really good job. We're saying, let's invest in those 9. Mm-hmm. Let's also find the schools in the district that are doing a really good job and invest in those. And as one of the parts of our announcement recently was not just the $25 million into the district to help it deal with charter expansion. We also pledged $10 million to invest directly in improving and scaling up what's working in district schools. We need to be doing both and.
Yeah, but some of that expansion and the graduation rate and the performance rate, all of which is good news, is also because the population of enrollment in charters is made up of people who are coming in from private schools and Catholic school transfers. So the population pool expanded at the same time. So, you know, I mean, some people estimate that a third of the charter students, I mean, Pew estimated a third of the charter students are coming from not district schools, but opportunities that parents are choosing to exercise from elsewhere. So, yes, there's some good news, but we can't sort of pretend that the charters are, by and large, solving the problem for low-income students. They don't educate high concentrations of juvenile justice kids. They don't educate high concentrations of special ed kids. And actually, super poor kids, they're not doing a good job with, except for very rare exceptions. And those exceptions are interesting to me. Charters in general are not, just like failing public schools aren't.
Well, I was wondering, are public schools or district schools doing a good job with low-income, high-risk children?
No, I would say by and large that, yes, obviously you can look at Carver, you can look at Magnet High Schools. They very much follow the pattern of charters, although because they are, they will have a higher concentration of low-income students in general than charters. But we have a challenge in public education. There is no question. And there's a few public schools, Blaine Elementary, Mastery, you know, pick it. There are places that seem to be figuring out how to do things right, and we need to replicate those. And I agree, we need to get out of the charter, pro-charter. All of those things require resources.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't solve the school funding crisis, this fight, pro and anti-charter, will become is the red herring. It is the red herring in this conversation.
Well, just picking up on that, and you're basically saying to the School Reform Commission, let's hold off, let's figure out some of these problems before going ahead on charters. But if you've got thousands of students and their parents that want their children to be enrolled in charter schools, what do you say to them?
Wait, well, you have thousands of parents who want to enroll in their neighborhood school. Look at the line at Penn Alexander. Look, I'm in Adair in Fishtown. We have parents who can't get into Adair. There are parents who want to get in their neighborhood elementary school or their neighborhood charter. And so we have a demand problem without question overall. And again, people are choosing things based on it's convenient, it's safe, and hopefully it's quality.
Mm-hmm.
But every school needs to be in that situation. And a school without a counselor, a school without a nurse, 11 librarians across the entire Philadelphia School District, who are we kidding that any of this is going to be solved by changes in governance?
Go ahead, Mark, and then we'll get to our callers and emailers and people like that.
I want to put two other issues on the table real quick, because this funding problem is absolutely real. One of the things we need to be doing is closing at a more aggressive pace the lower performing charter schools. Charter schools get a 5-year contract, and if they're not doing a good job at the end of that 5 years, they shouldn't get the right to continue to operate. Part of the problem is, as Donna mentioned earlier, the district has not invested enough resources in its charter authorizing office to effectively monitor the performance and more aggressively close those low-performing schools. A small investment of a few million dollars in staffing up that office would allow us to close a lot more schools at a faster pace that would free up dollars so that new charter seats could take the place of old charter seats. The other thing that a lot of listeners probably don't know is that in the fourth quarter of 2014, more than $10 million in new money flowed into the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit Program. That's money that's going to be available next fall to families wishing to return to private and Catholic schools, which would take some burden off the public system and save tens of millions of dollars to the school district, because when they lose a student to a private school, it costs the district nothing, and they're saving the money from what they would have had to spend on that child.
Let me reintroduce the two of you. That's Mark Gleason. He's the executive director of the Public School Partnership. Also with us, Donna Cooper, executive director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. We are talking about schools here in the city of Philadelphia, some of the many challenges facing charter schools and district schools, and obviously the overlay of ongoing financial problems, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get, it looks like Elizabeth from West Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Elizabeth, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
I've kind of been listening to the conversation, and, you know, my statement was that we continue to give money to failing schools while quality charters have proven their ability to do more with the resources and improve education for all children. In many neighborhoods, quality education is literally right across the street, but the child is on the waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then is, how long are parents expected to wait for the district to improve failing schools when there are high quality charter schools getting the job done right now, today? So that demand for expansion is there.
I hear you. And I think you speak for a lot of parents. So Donna, I'm back at you.
Well, I totally agree with you. I think there's demand for every high-quality building in the city, charter and not charter. Like we said, there are lines at other buildings. But I think there's also, you know, a desire for parents. I think about Imani Charter, which has had its charter revoked. It was extremely low-performing charter. Parents were upset when that school closed, just as what parents were going to be upset with Strawberry Mansion being closed. The problem is that when something local is being closed, when something is safe, and Imani was safe and a wonderful environment, but it was doing a poor job educating its students. Now, the school district has closed down 26 schools. And there are probably more schools that could be partnered with charters or other effective change agents that would improve them more quickly, and they should. But we don't necessarily only need to look at charters for high performance. I mean, what's going on at Penn Alexander, and how does that get replicated? What's going on at Blaine, and how does that get replicated? And so these are, again, we need to be, as Mark said, get out of the charter, non-charter. Mm-hmm. There's some quality operators where parents want to get their kids in, and how do we use them, whether they're district or charter, to improve the buildings that are out there?
I have asked this question before when we've talked about education, specifically underperforming schools, which is, why can't you take the model that works and, as you said, Donna, and replicate it? And I mean, in part of when the state took over the schools in Philadelphia, part of the mission seemed to be, let's find what works and then let's replicate it.
Well, our view on that is that usually it's not the model that drives what works. What drives successful schools is the people in the building, the culture in the building, the set of expectations in the building. There are lots of different models that are working in Philadelphia. There are arts-focused schools that are working. There are science-focused schools. There are large schools. There are small schools. The common ingredient in those schools is leadership with vision, leadership that inspires teachers, leadership that supports the teachers to be excellent every day, and a culture that sets high expectations for kids no matter what challenges they bring in through the door. We see that in lots of different kinds of schools. What gets in the way in too many of our schools is all kinds of problems. It's a lack of funding in some cases. It's bureaucracy that isn't aligned to the goals of the school in other cases. In other cases, we don't have a good talent pipeline into the school. We're not training the teachers properly for what's needed in that particular community. And so there is opportunity for collaboration to sort of share best practices. But we also have to sort of make sure we're focusing resources on what really matters. And at the end of the day, schools is a people-focused business or enterprise. And we need to be training up teachers, making sure they have the support and the coaching they need to be great. And we need to have leaders who come into the school every day, making sure that building is focused on maximizing what kids learn while they're there.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. I'm sure you want to add to that, Donna, but let me just read a tweet from Walt. He says, if the state wants charter schools, let the state fund 100% of the charter schools, not force the costs on Philadelphia. The PSP donors are secret. I bet they are charter operators and school profiteers. Do you want to take the last part of his comment there?
Our donors are not secret. Anybody could go to our website and look up our donors. We have about 60 donors. They include local foundations. They include national foundations, local businesses, and local entrepreneurs and individuals. The donors around this particular commitment of new money, yes, they're not ready to go public because we don't have an arrangement yet. The school district hasn't applied to us for the money, hasn't even officially responded to us regarding the offer. So it's premature for that.
To you, Donna, the first part of the question is, you know, if the state wants charters, let the state pay for it. Is that an argument that works for you?
No, what works for me is that Lower Merion spends about $23 million per student.
$23,000. Otherwise, I would be there.
$23,000 per student. And, you know, they come from relatively well-off families, by and large, in Lower Merion. And the performance of that school district cannot be beat. And so the question isn't, should the state, if they want charters, pay for them? What the state should be doing is adequately funding the school districts of this commonwealth and making sure there is sufficient resources for every child. The problem with the $25 million offer, the problem with the 40 applicants, is that it's going to enable some children to win while others will lose to make up the cost of expansion for the charters. And that's just an unacceptable, untenable situation for any moral human being. We cannot have one child win while another loses. So if the state were to pay for charters, we'd still have the school districts severely underfunded. We need to change the terms of this debate.
Well, and is there some agreement, Mark, about a fair funding formula, looking at how charters are funded and what happens to districts who have charters in their district?
Yes.
You and Don,
yes.
I'm just trying to find out.
I would say there are two big problems at the state level. One, we don't have a weighted student funding formula that drives money to districts based on how many students are there and what the needs of those students are. Districts that have seen substantial enrollment declines in Pennsylvania have not had their funding reduced, and so it's created an imbalance with the school districts that have seen growth in student population. We've got to fix that problem. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the way we fund charters is problematic. There are challenges around the way charters get reimbursed for special education, for example. The current funding system treats all special education students as equals, when, as Donna noted earlier, some special ed students have greater needs and are harder to serve and require a different cost basis. So we have several structural problems, and we've got to fix those. There's no question we have to fix those. But I would also like to point out that we have to work on the spending side, too. There was a good article in one of the local papers recently about Montgomery County and how they completely turned around a budget deficit in Montgomery County without increasing taxes and while also driving many more resources into the highest priority services and departments. And it was done through zero-based budgeting, which means go to a clean sheet of paper, take the amount of money you have, and figure out what your priorities are, and then drive the money to those enterprises. We need to do more of that in public education as well, because we're spending a lot of money on programs and initiatives that were well-intentioned in their time but haven't yielded the results we're looking for, because kids aren't getting the benefit.
We're almost up on a breakdown, but I'd be curious about your
response. We're spending a lot of money now in Philly. That's hard. You know, Philly is a very severely underfunded school district with 11 librarians, about 60 counselors. I mean, there's not a lot of fat in the Philly budget. You can walk through the administration building. They're now down to 3% on admin. So we could perhaps—
On administrative costs.
On administrative costs. Thanks, Marty. I mean, I think, you know, there is plenty of room for the government to be more efficient. I was in the government for 24 years, and I saw a lot of room for improvement. But the situation in the Philadelphia School District now is just beyond comprehensible in terms of what's acceptable. We are in a situation where we are fighting about how to give kids access to quality, where some will get it and some won't, because the state is not stepping up to the plate.
Let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. I should add that she served for 8 years as Governor Ed Rendell's Chief of Policy when Ed Rendell was the governor of Pennsylvania. Mark Gleason also with us, Executive Director of the Philadelphia School Partnership. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, talking with Mark Gleason and Donna Cooper about schools in Philadelphia, charters, district schools, some of the financial problems, and how to provide and ensure a quality education for all children in the city, which should be everybody's goal. Let me get to David from West Philadelphia to join us. David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good, how are you?
Good. My point or my comment is about the $7,000 figure for stranded costs. The Boston Consulting Group has been, as soon as they put that report out, that report was attacked for all kinds of reasons by people who support the district. And I think rightfully so. The only number that they really want to hang on to is that $7,000 stranded cost. They don't believe anything else in the Boston Consulting Group except that number. So my question is for Ms. Cooper, are you in agreement with the Boston Consulting Group on breaking up the district or any of the other things? And why is this specific number so important? And why was this one the only number they got right?
Yeah. David, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Donna.
Good question, Dave.
Yeah.
So a couple things. I think there were some real strengths in the Boston Consulting Group report. I think they were tough. It was tough medicine. For instance, the report recommended closure of schools. In fact, 26 schools have been closed since that report came out. So it was very tough medicine. And I do have to say that I think You know, we basically are moving towards a portfolio district, like it or not. And I think they raised the question of if you're going to be, you know, they were advocating that we become more of a portfolio district. That is happening with so many kids already in charters. So remember, a lot of the attack on the Boston Consulting Group report was how it was done, how it was funded. But I will say to your point, the School Reform Commission directed its fiscal office to figure out the stranded costs. And they have come back themselves, independent of the Boston Consulting Group's report, and found that it is about $7,000. And actually, just from a basic common sense, it kind of makes sense to me that that's what it would be until you can get to the scale of enrollment in a particular building when you can get rid of a whole class or close a school.
David, thanks for the call. I know you probably have something to say on that, Mark, but let me toss a tweet at you. This is a tweet from EAM, E-A-M. What are some of the 9 successful operators? So on your list, who's doing well in Philadelphia when it comes to charters?
So Mastery Charter Schools is probably the best known operator. They're up to 15 schools. And what's interesting about Mastery is almost all of their charter schools are neighborhood charter schools. So they don't use a lottery citywide admission. They draw from a neighborhood like a traditional district school would. And they've shown remarkable progress from taking over some of the lowest performing schools in the city and very substantially increasing their performance in a relatively short amount of time, 5 to 7 years. Frieri Charter School has a high school and has now recently added a middle school, has also done a really strong job. KIPP has 3 schools in Philadelphia that do a very nice job. KIPP has very strong data nationally and in Philadelphia that their kids, once they get through high school, get into college and persist in college, which is a huge, hugely important data point, because it's not enough to get somebody into college. You need them to have the skills
sure.
to be able to survive and get through to graduation. So those are a few of the examples. I don't want to spend a lot of time litigating the $7,000 figure. That's hard to do on the air because you get into some pretty complex issues. I would just say that the district has never put out a spreadsheet that really shows where the $7,000 comes from. And if they do, you know, we want to have a conversation with them about what's the real cost, and let's try to figure out a solution. We want to be part of the solution here. We're not looking to stir up trouble. We're trying to get more kids in good schools.
Donna, let me ask you something that I saw in doing my homework for the show, that about 40% of district third graders are proficient or better when it comes to reading. Just 40%, meaning 60% do not. What does that number mean to you?
Well, actually, it's the reason that PCCY started the campaign called Read by Fourth, because it's extraordinary that the very basic reading can't be taught. And that figure is alarming, and it is both in charters and non-charters. Like, both systems are not doing well. Charters a teeny bit better than the regular schools. And it says to me we need to think about instruction. We have many more kids coming into charters and public schools who suffer trauma, who are foster care kids, who are living in poverty. And also, we have never really cracked the nut on kids that don't learn traditionally. Like, I learned to read really easily. If you don't, you need extra help. The district has opened 2 buildings that are really testing out more holistic way of teaching reading as a result of this campaign. PSP, Philadelphia School Partnership, has been part of thinking about this and helping the district buy instructional resources to boost the share of kids reading. But it does say that in general, and this is not unique to Philadelphia, this is a national problem, that for a long time, the earliest indicator of third grade reading has been ignored, and if addressed, could solve a lot of these problems. Likewise, pre-K is another, you know, and the kids should be reading when they walk into kindergarten, not learning it by third grade. And we really need to recognize what the research says and invest early.
In fact, we did a show recently kind of keying off of President Obama talking about early childhood education. Does your organization support that as well?
Our primary mission is K-12, but we believe absolutely, as Donna does, that early literacy is the key to really improving the overall educational system in the city. We recently made a grant to the school district so we could put a pre-literacy instructional curriculum into all of its pre-K programs around the city, which is, I think, about 9,000 students. And look, what we're not doing enough of, we know how to teach children to read in America. What we're not doing enough of in Philadelphia is providing the coaching and the training that teachers need in those early grades to be able to address the different ways that children need to be able to have to learn to read. We've got to triple down our investment in that area, and then we can really start to move the needle in a lot of these schools.
Go ahead, Donna.
Can I mention that Philadelphia is going to have a ballot question about pre-K on the ballot in May? The citizens of this city will be asked if they will support a charter change to establish a commission to identify a strategy for city council to adopt within 6 to 9 months for universal pre-K. And we need Philadelphians, pro-charter, anti-charter, pro-education, pro-kid, pro-grandparent, to come and vote strongly for this, because it will not only send a message to the incoming mayor, but it will give Governor Wolf and the legislature the ammunition that they need to put resources behind this as well.
Let me get, looks like Amara from West Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Amara, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
PSG is claiming it will be helping to advocate for return of the charter reimbursement, but during past education funding pushes, Mark Leeson has actively obstructed Philly education funding efforts by going around Harrisburg and telling politicians that money doesn't matter and providing them cover to stick it to Philadelphia. So I'm just wondering, you know, what he has to say to that and why we should believe him now.
Okay, fair enough. Amara, thanks for the call. Mark Leeson, go ahead.
Yes, I don't know what conversations Amara is referring to. We've been a supporter of more funding in Philadelphia for Philadelphia schools since the beginning of PSP. We do have a message that funding alone doesn't do the job. We need to do both, and we need to both increase funding and improve the way and be more rigorous in evaluating the way that we spend the money to make sure that it's yielding the kind of academic gains that students need.
We have a tweet from Michael Vincent. Why is the district not putting more than three people on the charter board to close bad charters? How are children going to be educated if we're not closing bad schools? Public and charter schools at work have to work. I mean, you raised this, Donna, the fact that they're just
the school district has $265 million less today than it did 4 years ago. So it is not a lack of a desire or will. It's a lack of resources. And obviously, they have to make a decision. Are we going to expand the charter office, or are we going to hire a librarian? I mean, that's really, you know, basically it's a kitchen table conversation. What bill are we going to pay? Right now, they can't pay the bills that they need to pay. They need to both expand the charter office and get the resources and buildings. And that's why the state's engagement is so important in this.
You want to add to that, Mark?
I just want to give a shout out to the members of the School Reform Commission who don't get paid for what they do. And they've been wrestling with some really hard, difficult circumstances and decisions in these last couple of years. Closing those 30-plus schools was enormously difficult. You know, as Donna referenced earlier, it's always painful to close a local school. They've had to deal with some tough negotiating issues with the teachers' union, and they're in the middle of this fight for more funding. It's hard work. They're having to make hard decisions. They don't have a lot of good options in front of them. I don't always agree with them on every issue, and we push them on this issue of quality schools being at the forefront. But these are folks who are giving a lot of time and energy to trying to make things better, and I just am very respectful of their effort.
You both talked about the importance of this not be district versus charter school, which in many ways it has become. It's also unions versus the SRC. It's also Philadelphia versus Harrisburg. And it seems to me, Donna, that's a recipe for inaction, don't you think, if everyone is at each other's throats?
You know, having been in Harrisburg for those 8 years, I do not believe that the elected officials in Harrisburg have the level of malice towards Philadelphia that we think they do. People care about kids up there. But these are really tough decisions because they require a tax increase. Like it or not, to fund schools across the state, we're going to have to raise taxes. So Philly becomes a foil in that. But the real issue is the fear of politicians to really look at Pennsylvania's extraordinarily low tax rate base and say, hey, people, let's pony up for the future. And, you know, that begins with the Reagan Revolution of taxes being bad and the government being bad. And Philly gets used in that. But I think that the gains being made in Philadelphia schools, William Height, the SRC's dedication, those things really accrue benefit to us in Philadelphia, in the legislature. And we need to be unified in speaking about those things in a positive way so that people have the cover they need to take these votes.
Go ahead, Mark.
I believe that we are on a path to getting a reasonable fix to the school funding problem, a weighted student funding formula. We may not get it this year. We're certainly going to try like heck. But hopefully within the next 2 to 3 years, we will get there. I mean, we have a governor who seems very committed to it. I think we have a legislature that is coming to grips with the depth of the problem. Taxpayers across the state are starting to feel some of the pain that taxpayers in Philadelphia and residents in Philadelphia have been dealing with. We got a lot of work to do still to get it done, but I do feel like there's a path.
We have a tweet from Charlie. And Mark, I want to hear your answer to this. He says, how is PSPs, that's your group, how's that offer to the district anything other than pure bribery. Those are his words.
We are responding, as we do in all of our grants. When we make grants to any school or to the school district, it is the result of an application to us for funding. Essentially, our offer is an invitation to apply for that funding. What's unique about it is in the past, we have funded investments at the school level. So when a charter school gets approved, they might apply to us, and we might give them a grant to help them cover startup expenses. In this case, we're willing to go beyond that and also make a grant to the authorizer, the school district, to help them deal with the stranded costs issue. We're doing this in response to their saying, again, it's in Dr. Height's Action Plan 2.0 that he wants to expand quality charters, but he has said publicly that cost is an inhibiting factor. We're trying to be responsive to their need. They don't have to take the money. Mm-hmm. They may not choose to take the money. They may say it's not enough money, in which case we're open to a conversation about trying to put more on the table. Again, we just want to be part of the solution if we can be.
Anything you want to add to that,
well,
Donna?
I guess I would say that I think people would find the offer slightly more intellectually consistent if it said, we have $35 million, Bill. Let's sit down and talk about how we expand quality options. And it wasn't linked to charters or traditional schools. And we start with a blank slate on that. Then people, I think, might feel a little bit less twisted about this. I recognize it's totally within PSP's wherewithal and prerogative to say how they've said it. But I think that's where people are getting a little bit twisted up in this. And I think there's some legitimacy mm-hmm. to that. I also think I feel a little bit like it's like a Walmart gift wrapped in a Tiffany gift wrap because the numbers don't add up. And so I really hope the SRC does its job and tell us what the costs are for these charters to expand before they make their decisions.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Mark, you want to add something?
I would just say amen to that. Let's get the real number out there and let's talk about how we can solve it. We may not be able to get our donors to come up with as much money as they want, but we will try. That's all I can say.
Let me see what Ina from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Ina, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I am part of Children's Scholarship Fund Philadelphia, so I see firsthand the demand from real parents who are very desperate for better opportunities today. So the word that comes to my mind is there's an urgency because children are being underserved now. And while we wait for a more perfect system, if we don't scale what's working and we don't act with a sense of urgency, we are really misguided. And to the comment about the potential donation of $35 million, I think the twisted attitude really is on the part of people that are so critical of the donor's intent. I worked for the Annenberg Children's First when Walter Annenberg just benevolently gave $50 million to the district, and I worked with the school district to try to administer that $50 million. And what I did see was that with all the good intent on the part of a donor, it wasn't a strategic gift, and it was wasted. $50 million did not move the needle forward.
That's a shame.
Quality.
And I have to jump here only because we have a minute. I want to give Mark Leeson a chance and perhaps Donna Cooper a chance for a quick response.
Education requires funding. It also requires great people, great leaders, and it requires a great strategy. And, you know, I think we have a strategy in the district. Action Plan 2.0 talks about doing a number of things. It talks about transforming district schools. It talks about investing in early literacy and pre-K. And it talks about expanding quality charters. We need to do all of that. We need more money to do it well. But in the meantime, we've got an opportunity in front of us right now. Whether it's 9 schools or 15 schools, there's some number of schools that are ready, willing, and able to serve kids better today, and we should try to do everything we can to put kids in those seats, even as we're trying to solve the bigger structural problems.
10 seconds, 15 seconds.
Ina, you're right. This is an urgent problem, and I would urge you to join the efforts in Harrisburg to explain to them how urgent it is that they respond and make it possible to put strategic options on the table with resources.
Well, I wish we could go on because it was a great conversation. My thanks to both of you. Donna Cooper, thank you for joining us on Radio Times. Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. Mark Leeson, thank you very much as well.
Great to be here.
Nice to have you both here. And he's the executive director of the Philadelphia School Partnership. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to find us on Twitter, how to follow us on Facebook. And I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us for Radio Times in Review coming up next.